I am Harriet Tramer, and welcome to Reaching for the Gold. This show deals with all aspects of aging, and I hope you will join us for this fascinating journey every other Tuesday afternoon at this time. Being comfortable is a goal that virtually everybody works towards, and these are even more pronounced as we age, and feeling at ease becomes an ever higher priority. Our two guests today work to help aging people gain comfort in their homes, a comfort that they deserve. Our first guest is Norm Stark. Both an architect and a lawyer, he has made a career of helping seniors protect themselves as they make wise decisions as regards home purchasing and financing. Dr. Carol Osborne, a veterinarian, works with pets as well as their owners to help them achieve a beneficial relationship, and her efforts are vital as the bond between a human and an animal can be very strong and health-giving. Norm, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much. I appreciate being on.
First question I'm going to start you with, I'm going to give you an example, and I'm going to let you work from there. Let's say a couple between 75 and 80.
Youngsters.
Youngsters, that's correct.
Well, they're younger than me.
Well, okay. They are in relatively good health. They can make stairs, the whole bit. They're interested in a new house, and they realize they have to look to the future. They want something that they can deal with not only now, but in the future. What are some advice, some ideas you might give them?
Well, one of the first things I would do is consider retaining an attorney, not because I am an attorney, but because an attorney can help you with the paperwork, including the offer and acceptance, which most realtors give you in a pre-printed form. There's no requirement that you sign a pre-printed form, except in the eyes of the realtor. But then again, you must be careful. One of the most important things you have to be careful about is don't fall in love with the house, and by all means, do not ever buy one as is. If the contract says, in quote, as is, unquote, condition, watch it. That's a red flag that says you are buying a house and no representations are made as to its conditions or quality. So be very careful. Then you also have to be careful of the percentage of interest and the percentage of commission that the realtor will offer, because those are really negotiable. And additionally, you want to be sure that you're getting a house with no liens, no encumbrances of any kind. And so you have to be sure that the title is clear and that your contract with your realtor provide that there's going to be a warranty deed, not merely a quitclaim deed, but a warranty deed which will warrant and defend against all claims and encumbrances of any kind. That's for openers. How are we doing?
We're doing great.
All right.
But a few more questions. You knew
of course
that was coming. I'll be blunt. Are these a frequent problem? In other words, one out of every million houses has these encumbrances, and everybody goes to a lawyer to check on it. The lawyer gets a lot of work, but people are maybe going through steps they don't need to go through because this is such an infrequent thing.
Is this
something that happens?
It's not infrequent. As a matter of fact, it happens frequently. If you don't know the size of the property you're getting and you require a survey, you should at least require a survey. Is the driveway, for example, a shared driveway? Are there any rights that you're giving up by terms of liens or leases or releases as to the use of the property? For example, are you giving up the oil and mineral rights below the ground? Whether you know it or not, that may be there. Or there may be a prior encumbrance that involves oil and mineral leases or uses for access by a utility company. Are you giving them 10 feet, 20 feet of your property as a forever use for maintenance of utility lines or underground gas lines or whatever? You've got to be careful. It has to be in the contract.
Mm-hmm. Now, I'll let you speak now as an architect. If a couple, 75 to 80, what are some things they should look for architecturally so the house can grow with them? In other words, maybe they can walk up steps now. They may not always be able to. What are things you should look for that says, hey, if I can no longer do A, B, C, and D, this house may still be appropriate?
Be careful of the sizes of doorways and entrances to bathrooms. If ultimately you require a wheelchair, for example, and they're not wheelchair accessible, and most of them are not, you won't have an opportunity to get into the bathroom, and that can be terribly, terribly important for you. So one of the other things that you want to consider, of course, in these, and I'm sorry for the remote sound, that's a cell phone that's calling, but ignore that for a moment. The other things you should consider is if the stairways themselves are wide enough, adequate, you may consider that as you get older, you may require a stairway mover or an elevator-type device on which you can sit, a moving chair, if you will. Those can be installed later. However, you've got to have enough room to permit the use of that walking stair, if you will, or the chair, and also permit someone, a passenger, to walk with you. As a person gets older and requires assistance, you have to have sufficient room to do that. Again, also, make sure that windows and doors are secure so that you can be secure from intruders. And at the same time, if the house doesn't have an alarm system, you want to know whether there is a wireless alarm or a regular alarm. Alarm system for assistance or for aid or for emergencies of any kind. Additionally, you want to see if the property is carefully secured from a garage, for example, so that you don't get the intrusion of fumes from a car, that is carbon monoxide fumes. And you also want to be able to know that you can get in and out of the various openings in the property. Those are just some of the basic things an architect will look for. Then also look at the potential for expansion space in case you ever wanted to add on either a room for a grandchild or a child or an assistant, someone to live with you to assist you, to help you, so that you can add on a small bathroom and a sitting room or a living room or a bedroom. Those are just a few of the things I would look for.
Mm-hmm. Now, you're based in Ohio, where that has not been as much of an issue, but many retired people move to places like Florida, California, Nevada, where there has been a housing bubble. Now more houses are being built, more apartments are being built. How can you protect yourself from what might in fact be a bubble? How can you say, okay, this price is likely to hold, or is that absolutely impossible?
It's impossible to tell what the what prices will be because they are based on the economy and they fluctuate. So do interest rates. You want to try to buy the best interest rate for yourselves. And above all, I would be very careful about reverse mortgages or equity loans. Those are dangerous. The fees are high. They're expensive. But as far as the bubble itself goes, you want to be sure you're getting quality. Quality is something that's hard to predict, and you may need to hire either an architect or an appraiser, preferably an architect, because even a home inspector will have so many things that he or she will deny that he or she inspects because they won't be responsible for it. Whereas an architect will look at the quality of the work and see if, in fact, there is quality there, so you're getting the benefit of the bargain.
Mm-hmm. Now, you mentioned reverse mortgages. I have seen many ads on TV for reverse mortgages. I'm sure everybody else has. They're frequent. What they express, and I'll let you discuss this, is you can get a reverse mortgage, and then you have an income stream that can help you deal with living expenses. You say they're dangerous. Why so? That sounds like a benign, helpful thing.
Well, they're dangerous in this regard. They are pinned to an interest rate, and they will be giving you so many years to live for a period of time. But the more important thing is the initial payment, that is the fees that are charged, the interest rate at the beginning, and you're going to be paying an incentive to the lender to give you a reverse mortgage. And by the time you add up all those fees, you're going to be getting an interest rate that's highly inflated, but that's truly hidden from you. So that here's what happens as you try to live out the value of the home, and at the end of a certain period of time, upon the death of one or more persons, if the property hasn't increased in value, there'll be a deficiency, and you'll have no remainder, whatever. You'll have no profit. If, on the other hand, the price has escalated, you will have a profit or an increased remainder or a balance, positive balance. But the problem is, by the time they deduct all the fees and interests and commissions, you probably will come out less than even. So I'd be terribly afraid of some of these incentives that these actors on television are telling you they're so interesting. Be terribly careful. A good ordinary mortgage rate is fine. Once you've paid off your property, it's yours. The only thing you owe are the taxes and the maintenance.
Let me make certain I understand this. You have a property worth $150,000. You take a reverse mortgage, you can use that equity. If at the time of your death or your spouse's death, you've used it all up, plus which you still have some of the fees to pay off, you can have a deficit rather than having anything at all left?
That's right. That's the problem. And by the way, that the amount of years that it's calculated is based on an interest rate. Because the bank is essentially lending you your own money at an interest rate. They intend to make money on it, and they do. And that's the reason that they have an incentive to sell it, whereas an ordinary mortgage is much more advantageous, and you can transfer it. You can't transfer an interest in an equity loan or in a reverse mortgage. You can't sell the property unless you pay off the mortgage.
In other words, if I have a reverse mortgage and I want to sell off my property and I have utilized, I'm going to say, $50,000 from that reverse mortgage, I have to pay back that money before I can sell my property?
Truly, that's the case, because you've used it up or you have to pay the interest and the charges on it, and you really don't have an advantage to that. Again, depending upon the wording of your reverse mortgage. You have to be terribly careful. Once again, the attorney can be invaluable to assist you before you sign on the dotted line.
Mm-hmm. Now, one other thing. There are many, many facilities they call continuing care retirement communities.
Yes.
Each case is a little different, but basically you put down a certain amount of money, and then you can go into independent living, and if it later becomes necessary, assisted living, possibly into a nursing home. Now, sometimes you have to buy your home when you come in there.
Yes.
Is that always unadvisable, sometimes advisable? What do you need to look out for?
Well, here's what people our age, and I'm saying our age because I'm 84 already, and I know from experience, based on my professional experience, what you have to look out for is this. There's a 5-year Medicare look back. That is, if one has to go to a nursing home today and you haven't already prepared a trust or some other form within which you can keep your real estate or give it to your children or grandchildren, that nursing home or facility wants that home and will take it from you. And that's going to be their bargaining point to give you access or entrance into the home. Otherwise, no home, no deal. And so for those of you who haven't arranged a trust or some other form of donative intent about your home, you'd better arrange it quickly before you get into that 5-year look back where there's no alternative.
In other words, if you give away your home and then move into a continuing care retirement community, you could not give your home away to one of your children or whomever you choose.
No,
move
not
in
within
there
5 years. Not within 5 years. Forgive me for interrupting. Not within the last 5 years. That's why there's a look back. They'll take that from your children. They'll require your children to give it up.
The nursing home will.
Yes, ma'am.
Okay, I understand what you're saying. If you purchase from a continuing care retirement community, you purchase a home within 5 years before you go into a nursing facility, there will be a look back, so you could not get government benefits in the nursing home facility.
Exactly, or they'll take your home. So I strongly urge those who have real estate or other property, try to arrange with a good attorney for a trust which is not attackable by the nursing home, which you can dispose of your property to children, grandchildren, or any other person or entity without a look back.
Mm-hmm. Now, I live in a condominium, so I'm going to bring that up.
All right.
What should you be particularly careful with a condominium? Are there, in fact, instances where somebody purchases this beautiful condominium by the ocean, we'll say down in Florida? Not to pick on Florida, but it has a beautiful ocean.
Yes.
And we'll say there's 25 living spaces in that condominium.
Yes.
Units. Only 12 are sold. There's a problem. The roof falls down. You then become responsible for having that fixed, and that can only be divided by 12 because there are only 12 people there.
That's true, too. The
13th. Is that something you have to be very careful of?
Absolutely. You have to be careful. A condominium association means shared living is what it really is, and you're sharing the cost of maintenance among the owners. Now, it doesn't mean that the developer who originally built it is home scot-free. The developer has to contribute also, because if he owns 13 shares that are unsold, he has to share also in the cost. So if there are 25 units, each of the units is apportioned 1/25 of the cost of the repair for that roof. The developer pays 13 of those 25, and you as an individual would pay 1/25. So you don't have to pay it all, and you're not subject to 1/12. It's divided equally. But again, you must be terribly careful about the condominium declarations and bylaws, because condominium associations, by virtue of their board of directors, can amend those declarations and bylaws and make rules that are outside of the declarations and bylaws. Be very careful when investing in a condominium. You may want to keep a condominium in the form of a trust or an LLC, that is a limited liability corporation ownership. There's some advantage to that. And again, an attorney will tell you, I don't have enough time here today. I'd love to tell you about it. If you had a whole day, I'd be glad to talk with you.
The things you're telling me are very complex. I doubt, not to put anybody down, but I doubt that many older people or people of any age are very aware of a lot of what you're saying.
Well, you're kind. I appreciate that. And that's the reason you need a good and experienced lawyer, someone with gray hair, perhaps, if that's a qualification. And I have plenty of that. But the idea is it's good to have someone experienced. And do ask your lawyer, if you're considering one, is this something that you do regularly? Are you experienced in real estate? Are you experienced in condominium purchases? Can you tell me about home equity loans or reverse mortgages? And if they don't really know, then you don't want to retain that attorney. It's like getting someone in a beauty contest. They may win a beauty contest, but looks aren't everything in law. Knowledge is. Experience counts.
Now, what can you as an attorney or a bar association do to make people aware of how careful they need to be? I mean, you get these TV commercials blaring out at people constantly. You get the retirement communities. Very slick advertising, very slick look to their facilities. Chandeliers, everything.
Well,
people like the looks of that. They like the feel that, hey, if I do this, I'm going to be safe. I'm going to be all right. Isn't it hard to tell people, hey, you may not be so safe. You may not be all right. You may be endangering your financial security. Isn't this something people shy away from knowing?
Yes, they do. People tend not to want to see the things they should. They look for a sense of false security. It looks pretty. It sounds pretty. It smells good. In fact, some of the realtors have actually resorted to having someone bake an apple pie before they show a property, because you walk in and you smell apple pie or chicken roasting. And my God, this is home. I think we ought to buy it, dear. But that's something you have to be very careful of. Or they'll spray the room with some kind of nice spray that's inviting. There are many tricks to the trade, and I've heard a few, and I've tried to give you a few. But here's what I recommend. When you're in doubt, contact the local bar association. They can recommend and refer you to experienced attorneys who have experience in certain areas. And those are the ones you want to consider. Interview them. Find out what they can do for you and what they will charge. Don't be embarrassed about asking for it, even as you would consult a doctor. Ask what they will, what they see, what they know, what they can do. And if you're satisfied, only then consider working with them. And
you,
it's to your advantage. And it's to your advantage, by the way.
You say, like a doctor, if you're going... From what I've heard, if you're going to have a certain procedure, you want a whole surgical team that has done that many, many times. From what you're saying with some of these transactions, real estate transactions, you want a lawyer who is equally as experienced.
Absolutely. In fact, I'd get a second opinion, just like I would with a doctor. If I were told that this is a great buy, you better grab it, and an attorney said that, I think I'd go for a second opinion. Find another lawyer. See if he or she agrees. And here's another secret. You may want to call one of the lawyers that the Bar Association refers and ask them if Mr. So-and-so, to their knowledge, is a reputable real estate attorney or someone qualified to give you the information. They may say, oh, I don't care what they say about him. He's a stinker. Don't deal with him. He doesn't represent people very well. And... That's something to do. You have to be very careful. Even as you pick doctors, I think the real estate, for example, is the largest single investment you'll make in your lifetime. You want to be very careful as to how you do it and with whom you do it. Don't just believe the realtor because they say this is a great buy. This is a great income for them. This is their commission. And there's incentive to sell you something. So please be cautious.
Norm, thank you very much for being on the show.
My pleasure. I do appreciate it. And above all, good luck.
Thank you. I'm your host, Harriet Tramer, and welcome to Reaching for the Gold. This show deals with all aspects of aging, and I hope you will join us for this fascinating journey every other Tuesday afternoon at this time. Being comfortable is a goal that virtually everybody works towards, and these efforts might become even more pronounced as we age, and feeling at ease becomes an increasingly higher priority. Our two guests today work to help aging people gain the comfort they deserve. Dr. Carol Osborne is a veterinarian, and she works with pets as well as their owners to help them achieve a beneficial relationship. And her efforts are vital to many aging people, as the bond between them and an animal can be very strong and health-giving. Our second guest is Bob Linscott, who is Assistant Director of the Boston-based LGBT Aging Project. His organization helps people of all lifestyles navigate their way through their maturing process. In some instances, these efforts can be limited to linking them with existing programs, but in other instances, it can go beyond simply making referrals. Dr. Carroll, welcome to the show.
Well, thank you, Harriet. I'm delighted to join you.
In general, you hear a lot of talk about this, but talk is talk. Is it really fact that animals can be health-giving to people, that they can be healing?
Absolutely. Pets act as family in the absence of family members. Pets provide empathy. They offer companionship, unconditional love, and relieve loneliness. They also enhance the sense of touch and feel. They help to relieve social isolation, as well as redevelop social awareness for these individuals. In addition, pets help to promote a sense of personal empowerment as they support self-efficacy and offer an enhanced sense of well-being to many of these older people with or without dementia that become isolated and alone as the years proceed.
Now, you're talking about older people. Is there some reason why the bond between older people and pets can be so strong? Is it because pets can be just so attuned to people in ways that you or I or other humans might not be?
I think that absolutely has a lot to do with it. Harriet, you can even look back to the days of Florence Nightingale. Way back then, she recognized that animals provide a valid level of social support even in the institutionalized care of the mentally ill. And it was actually not until the late 1970s that researchers began to uncover the scientific underpinnings of the human-animal bond. Just petting an animal, for example, not only reduces blood pressure, but also brings smiles to the faces of stressed-out patients, and we're talking about children as well as the elderly. Heart attack patients with dogs live longer than those without dogs. Therapy dogs induce relaxation. They evoke smiles, looks, leans, and touching from older people, indicating their expression of interest and pleasure just in the dog's appearance.
Mm-hmm. Now, is some of this because as a human, and particularly as a human in our society that's not all that attuned to nature, our minds function on an intellectual level, and that sometimes tunes out or overpowers the other portions of the mind, which may be attuned to other things, and animals, because they're obviously not intellectualizing in the way we are, can be attuned to these other portions of what's going on inside somebody?
Absolutely. Certainly, I think it's important to understand that we basically have three levels of dementia. Individuals with mild and moderate impairment definitely benefit from having animals. Individuals with severe mental impairment would still benefit from exposure to animals as well as contact, but most would not be in a real position to take on the responsibility of caring for the animal or trying to remember to feed, water, and provide exercise for the animal because they're having trouble doing that even for themselves. But in addition to something called a dog's sixth sense, which is made possible by a functional vomeronasal organ, which has become vestigial in humans, they are able to detect not only chemical imbalances, but also magnetic frequencies from the human brain that help them to understand and detect a variety of mental and physical actions and emotions, which outwardly, you know, we may not actually, you know, realize or be in tune with. So pets are, yes, much more in tune with people going from children all the way to the elderly with or without dementia. Pets are very much in tune
now
to these situations.
I horseback ride, And some people who don't quite understand can say, oh, the horse can tell if I'm afraid and they'll try to get rid of me. No, I don't know if the horse can tell if you're afraid. Maybe they can, maybe they can't. But because their survival depends on it, horses are very attuned to balance. And they can tell how their rider is balanced, if they're secure or not. And if they think the rider is not secure, they don't like that. And
you're absolutely right about that. In fact, horses have been used as the second most common animal, second to dogs, for therapy in older individuals experiencing various degrees of mental impairment.
Now, what I'm not quite understanding, and maybe you can clarify.
Sure.
I know for a fact that people who, for example, are prone to seizures, if they have a dog, the dog, through balance or whatever means they do it, nobody I wouldn't think knows for a complete fact, can tell if somebody might be about to experience a seizure, and they can help balance them or get help or whatever they do. Would that be possible for an older person who is prone to falling to have a therapy dog to help secure them, or is that just something that doesn't work or could work and has never been tried?
That's a very good point. Certainly, in an older individual with those issues, let's say for example the person is perhaps wheelchair bound, or has a walker. Certainly, an animal, and there are animals that are trained to help people with various levels of physical impairment. Certainly, if you're just older and wobbly, just having a large, sturdy animal nearby that is properly trained to assist you can, be worth everything. If you think you're going to fall, and that animal can brace himself and his body to help the person get themselves adjusted to avoid a fall. But stretching that all the way out, certainly I experienced a gentleman with chronic heart failure. This dog was saved by his dog, who was, through his sixth sense, able to detect abnormal electromagnetic frequencies.
Really?
Which let that dog know that his owner was getting ready to have a heart attack. Now,
wow.
This man, every day, took a big walk up the mountain, and he had his dog on the leash, and he was ready to take his walk up the mountain, and the dog, a big Rottie, flatly laid on the ground, and no matter how much the man pulled on his leash, the dog just laid there. Well, the man got so perturbed that he just let the leash go so that he could start his hike. It was less than 2 to 3 minutes later that the man experienced a heart attack, fell on the ground. It was at that point the dog was smart enough to somehow go into the man's house, knock the phone off the receiver, and help arrived in time to save to save this individual's life. Now, these same dogs are also trained, as you mentioned, to live and help children that experience epileptic seizures. Why? Because they can detect once again those abnormal electromagnetic frequencies in the brain, which let them know that a child, for example, is getting ready to have a seizure, in which case they nudge the child or get the caregiver so the child can be given, the appropriate medications to avoid that. That's also true with a diabetic person who might not have the right dose of insulin, and they would be getting ready to have a hypoglycemic or a low blood sugar incident. Dogs are also trained to actually sniff that out.
Mm-hmm.
Autistic children is a great one. It doesn't relate to the elderly, but autistic children with speech issues, for example, one little boy uttered his first word to a therapy parrot. Remember, parrots are very safe listeners, and these children find it much less threatening to, for example, explain to a dog the meaning of a particular passage of text as opposed to a crowd of listeners that might have something negative to say.
Mm-hmm.
So there's many things that these dogs are specifically trained for. Capuchin monkeys have been trained to help people with a variety of physical disabilities, especially without, let's say, arms and or legs.
Mm.
They are trained to help these people get dressed, pick up the car keys, help them feed themselves, help them cook, all kinds of things. So there are wonderful things that these animals offer all kinds of people, from the youngest to the oldest, and trained particularly and matched specifically. It's wonderful.
Now, what you're saying is wonderful, but the operant word here seems to be trained.
Yes.
Are there enough people to train these animals? Is this exorbitantly expensive? Are there only a few animals that might be inclined towards that type of training? I assume not every dog is.
Not every dog is. And the training that goes on is quite extensive in terms of developing the dog's quote-unquote people skills. The canine good citizenship certification is usually the first step in the training of most of these therapy dogs. There are two other programs, Therapy Dogs International and Delta Pet Partners, that also offer extended training programs for their canine candidates. And depending upon, you know, the specific disability of that individual, there are many, many groups out there that have dogs trained to help that individual with their specific, you know, health issue. The training is extensive, the cost is significant, and in many cases, for people with financial limitations, groups and communities get together and actually raise funds to provide, to pay for and provide these dogs, you know, to certain individuals, which is pretty terrific. I also think it's very important to mention, you know, we're all familiar with most of the good things, good effects that pets have on people in general. But one thing that everyone might not be familiar with is that interacting with animals increases human levels of a hormone called oxytocin. Oxytocin helps people feel happy and trusting. They say it may also offer longer-term health benefits. It promotes the body to be in a readiness to heal state. It supports the growth of new cells and predisposes us to an environment in which our bodies can be healthier. Now, the pets and the oxytocin release are particularly helpful to Alzheimer's patients during the agitation period, which is referred to as the sundown syndrome. And this syndrome, which is well known to caregivers, happens in the early evening. It causes restlessness, confusion, aimless wandering, agitation, and aggressive behavior, including biting, kicking, and hitting. Agitated patients often become uncooperative with evening routines. It makes the management of their care more difficult for the staff. In addition, aggressive behavior often leads to alienation, loneliness, fear, and accelerated aggression. So during this sundown period, the presence of dogs has benefited many patients by refocusing their attention to the dog versus the procedure at hand. In other words, the therapy dogs in this situation can be a very effective distraction, which reduces the patient's level of agitation and makes it easier for everyone involved to get the task at hand done. This sundown syndrome is thought to be associated with lighting changes as the day ends, the person has a feeling of going home. Evenings often trigger old memories, and that is agitating because it's upsetting to the individual. Understanding that light therapy is now being used, as well as a hormone called melatonin, a natural amino acid, which helps some individuals to get through this sundown syndrome just a little bit bit more easily.
Now, what you're saying, what comes to me, is a pet, I don't know as it necessarily needs to be an exquisitely trained assistance animal, but simply a pet may also make matters easier for a caregiver, may help relieve their stress just as much as it relieves the stress of the older person.
That's exactly correct. And certainly pets have proven more than helpful to not only alleviate the agitation for all involved while promoting socialization among not only the individuals with Alzheimer's disease, but also the workers and the staff at hand as well.
Mm-hmm. Now, we've been discussing the great benefits that pets or animals in general might bring to an older person. There's one thing that really comes into my mind. Let's say somebody, I'm putting in a figure, is 80, and they get just the cutest little dog you can imagine. They love this animal. Everything's great.
Sure.
I wouldn't say everything's great, but there's something good there. Companionship, something good there. Okay, now they're 85. They're doing all right, but life happens. It's snowing outside. It's hard for them to get out and walk the dog. It's hard for them to maybe do some tasks. They have a cat, and the cat has a litter box. Picking up things and cleaning out the litter box is a little bit harder at 85 than it was at 80. How can you deal with that type issues when it becomes harder for the person to do some pretty basic things in caring for this animal? And I don't necessarily mean mentally they can't handle it.
Physically.
I'm 85. It's snowing outside.
Sure.
Walking this dog. Come on already.
And that's where your support staff and your family members come into play. It's important to remember that family members are providing care at home for approximately 70% of people with Alzheimer's disease. According to statistics by Facts and Figures in 2008, nearly 10 million Alzheimer's caregivers in the United States provided 8.5 billion hours of unpaid care valued at approximately $94 billion.
And that figure is rising.
And that figure is rising dramatically. Uh-huh. In fact, and this is an old quote, by 2010, which we've passed, they calculated half a million new cases of Alzheimer's each year. By the year 2050, they calculate 1 million new cases per year. Understanding Alzheimer's is the sixth leading cause of death in the country, surpassing diabetes, and it is the fifth leading cause of death among individuals age 65 and older. And because the baby boomers are turning 65 in just a couple of short years, they're entering this arena with an increased risk of developing Alzheimer's. What we need is an aggressive plan to put in place to address the threat of this disease, as well as what are all the things that can actually be implemented, from pet therapy to family care to medicine to natural remedies, to help these people get quality of life, be cared for properly, and most importantly, the research is needed to, A, let's get the cause of this disease, and let's find a way to prevent it, ultimately.
Mm-hmm. That may be a ways off. Now, have you ever seen instances? I can understand. I've always loved animals. Somebody says, I've always loved animals. They get a pet when they're, let's say, 80. They've always had a pet, not unusual. They have a great relationship with this animal. Have you ever seen instances where somebody had never had a pet or point blank said, I don't want a pet, I don't like animals? They came to bonding with animals at an older age, and it made a big difference in their life?
Absolutely. Depending on where a person is in his or her stage of life, they grew up with animals, they grew up without animals. One of the worst things about what the elderly population is facing, particularly the elderly population with diminished mental capacity, is loneliness, isolation, a lack of social interaction. And whether or not you grew up with pets as a child, when you hit that particular phase in your life, what we find is that we open new doors to deal with the situation at hand, so that even though someone may not be an animal person and didn't grow up with animals and might not even particularly care for dogs and cats, they may find tremendous enjoyment from just staring at an aquarium and watching the fish swim, something that requires minimal cost, minimal maintenance, but again can provide hours of relaxation, visual stimulation, mental stimulation, relaxation, less aggression, and lowered stress.
Mm-hmm. Now, you mentioned an aquarium. You mentioned the parrot. Wonderful ideas. What type animals, other than what you've already mentioned, might you suggest for an older person facing the fact that, wow, we have to think about this? Can this person handle this animal for the next 10 years? What might be a good idea? I mean, I would suggest for somebody 75 and about 5 feet, my size, a Great Dane. Or maybe I'm incorrect in that. What type animal might you suggest?
Well, again, animals need to be matched both physically and mentally to the individual that we're going to pair them up with. It's also important to point out that we have robotic companion pets made to resemble a dog, a cat, a horse, a goat. All kinds of varieties are available, and these animals are currently being used in a variety of nursing homes and facilities that care for these individuals. And they're having very good luck offering pretty much the same benefits to the people, but with a complete reduction or elimination, if you will, of the actual need to care for, feed, water, exercise, etc., the pet in question. So researchers and scientists are out there doing their best to try to find a means to be able to deal with this growing group of individuals through a variety of tactics. And for those where a living real pet is not the answer, sometimes a robotic animal is just enough to do the trick.
Mm-hmm. You tell me things I never heard. This robotic animal, if it's a robotic dog, I could put it in my lap and hold it?
Sure, you can hold it and pet it. It'll turn its head and do all kinds of things. They can walk and do all... It's amazing what they can do, but they're, you know, like little robots in the shape of dogs and cats and other animals.
That's amazing. I mean, it really is. Dr. Carroll, thank you very, very much for being a guest on the show. And if there's anything else you'd like to add to what we've said, by all means.
Well, I am an integrative veterinarian. My name is Dr. Carol Osborne. I'm in Chagrin Falls, Ohio. We welcome questions and offer pet health consultations for dogs and cats. Our toll-free phone is 1-866-DR-CAROL, which is 866-372-2765. You can also visit us online at carolonpets.com.
Thank you very much.
Well, thank you, Harriet. It was my pleasure to join you today. And if I can join you in the future or offer anything that might be an aid to your show, please feel free to reach out and contact me in the future. I would love to join you.
Thank you.